We are up to Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Bet, Chapter 11, Sentence 12. Last week, we saw the Jews elect Yiftach. They had originally kicked him out. He had gone off to the east where he gathered these empty people as we described them. And then they find themselves in need of somebody to lead them against Ammon. And they pick Yiftach as their leader. Nobody volunteered. And they come to Yiftach. And we saw the back and forth negotiation in which Yiftach says, I'm not interested in being used for the sake of the war. And then you're going to send me away again. I don't want to just be a katsin. I want to be a rosh. And they said, okay, we'll make you a rosh. And Yiftach said, well, you know, of course I'm going to be a rosh. If I'm going to save you from Ammon, you better believe I'm going to become your leader. You're not going to have a choice in the matter. And they said, we're going to make you the rosh now, even before you succeed. There were multiple ways to read the psukim, but that was one way that seemed to work well. And one of the points that emerged from this was the point that we've been making since Perek Yud, that Yiftach demands power. It's the Abimelech model, which they should have learned not to follow, and it's certainly a bad sign. So we'll see what Yiftach does, and what he actually does when he takes charge is surprising for me. And I'm still not entirely comfortable with my explanation for what he does. It's a very strange thing, given what we know about him. But it starts with, again, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Bet, Chapter 11, Sentence 12. Vayishlach Yiftach Malachim al Melech b'nei Ammon lemor. Yiftach sent Malachim. Malachim, it's fairly clear, means messengers, not angels, to the king of Ammon to say the following. Ma li valach ki vasa elai lihilachim be'artzi. What is between me and you such that you came to fight in my land? Why are you starting with me? Ma'li valach. What is this? That phrase, ma'li valach, is one that comes up elsewhere. The best example may be the one with Yoshiyahu and Paro Necho. When Paro Necho wants to go to war from Egypt to go through Israel to fight with Bavel, and Yoshiyahu says, you're not coming through our land. And Paro Necho says to him, you know, why are you starting with me? You don't need this. And that's what Yiftach says. Well, the king of Ammon says to Yiftach's messengers, "Kilakach Yisrael as artzi ba'alo somi Mitzrayim, because you took my land when you went from Egypt. When you went from Egypt into this land, you took my land. My land being the land east of the Yarden, may Arnon ve'ad hayabok ve'ad hayarden, from the Arnon to the Abok to the Yarden. We get three boundaries here. We don't get the eastern boundary." Just these others. Yarden obviously is the western boundary. The Arnon and the Abok are bodies of water. Excuse me. The Arnon is the southern border of Ammon, and the Abok is the northern border of Ammon. So from Arnon to Abok, south to north, and west to the Yarden, that was our land. And that's why I'm fighting with you. Vata Hashiva and Bishalom, give these lands back in peace, and we won't need to fight with you. But if you want to know why, this is why. Yeah. Correct. I mean, that's not the entirety of it, but that's what Ammon is claiming of that land east of the Yarden. You remember they had. We're gonna see more about this. But they fought with Sichon the Amori, right? They dealt with Edom. They had this business with Moab and with Bilam. Right? You all have nice maps to work from.
You're saying Ammon, well, according to this, I'm saying Ammon is kind of on the lower half here, but Reuven, Gad, and Menashe are above it.
So Reuven, Gad, and Menashe split that land east of the Yarden. Menashe gets the north, Gad is in the middle, and Reuven is in the south. I don't know what they're showing you.
Ammon even south of that. I mean, east of that. Mm-hmm.
No, that's not. That's not meant. Yeah. All right. So so they say, give us back our land. Vayosef od Yiftach. So Yiftach goes again. Vayishlach malachim amelach b'nei Ammon, and he sent messengers to the king of Ammon. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Ko amar Yiftach. So says Yiftach, Lo lakach Yisrael as Eretz Moab as Eretz Bnei Amon. Israel did not take the land of Moab. Israel did not take the land of Amon. Ki ba'alosami Mitzrayim, when they came out of Egypt, Vayelach Yisrael ba'midbar ad Yamsuf, Israel went through the wilderness to the Yamsuf, Vayavo Kadesh, and they came to Kadesh, Midbar Kadesh, Vayishlach Yisrael malachim, a malach Edom. And Israel sent messengers to the king of Edom, Lamor, saying, or to say, Ebrana ve'artzecha, I'm going to go through your land, Velosham, meaning I just want to get into Israel. I want to get across the Yarden. Let me go through Edom. Edom is the southernmost of these lands that are east of the Yarden. So they said, let's go through your land. Velosham ha-melech Edom, and the king of Edom didn't listen. V'gama melech Moab, shalach v'lo avam, they also sent to the king of Moab, further north, he didn't want. Vayeshev Yisrael v'kadesh, and Israel dwelled in Kadesh. Vayelech b'amidbar, they sat in the wilderness, they traveled in the wilderness. Vayasev es eretz Edom v'es eretz Moab, they went all the way around Edom and all the way around Moab, working their way north, but flanking them to their east. Vayevomi mizrach shemesh l'eretz Moab, they came east of Moab, Vayachanun, which is the same as Vayachanu, Be'ever Arnon, and they camped by the Arnon, Velobo Bigvul Moab. They didn't enter Moab, Ki Arnon Gvul Moab. Arnon is the boundary of Moab. Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim, and here's what happened next. We sent messengers, El Sichon Melech Ha'emori, to Sichon, king of the Amori, Melech Cheshbon, the king of Cheshbon, Cheshbon being a city in that area. Vayomer lo Yisrael, and Israel said to the Amori king, Nabrana ve'artzachad mekomi, we'd like to go through your land to get to our place being west of the Yarden. Vlohem in Sichon is Yisrael avor bigvulo. Sichon was not interested in letting the Jews go through. They did not trust the Jews to travel through their land. Vayasov Sichon es kolamo. Sichon gathered his entire nation. Vayachanu biyatza. They camped in Yatza. Vayilachem in Yisrael. And they went to war with us. So Hashem, God of Israel, gave Sichon and his entire nation into the hands of Israel, and we struck them. And that's how we ended up with the entire land of the Amori who dwelled there. We got everything from the Amori. May Arnon, from the Arnon, Va'ad Hayabok to the Abok, Umin Hamidbar, from the wilderness, Va'ad Hayardin to the Jordan. In other words, that land that you're claiming as yours, we got it off the Amori. Your problem isn't with us. We got it after the Amori already had it.
Did they get it from them?
Precisely.
But he's making it sound like it wasn't going to be ours in the first place. He's making it sound only because he would let us in, that's why we got the land.
Yep, which is historically accurate.
Oh, okay. I thought it was always considered part of Israel.
So that was something we discussed, but it was way back when. You're not responsible to remember this. Back in Yehoshua, when we got to the discussion in Perek Yudalef, Bet Yud Gimel, when we started talking about the division of the land, and we talked about the division of the land on the eastern side of the Yarden, one of the questions that we asked was that supposed to be part of Israel from the beginning, or is it something different? And we noted that there are sources that indicate both ways. On the one hand, the fact that Moshe is allowed in says that it's not Israel. Otherwise, what's he doing there? There's even a medrash that says that Moshe argues at that point, because he says, I made it into here, maybe God is going to let me go all the way into the land. There's also, regarding the laws of Shemitah, the Torah says, when you enter the land, and the Sifri, I think it's the Sifri, on that says, meaning when you cross the Yarden. You're not called entering the land when you get there. On the other hand, it's certainly part of what was promised originally. This is the original promise that went to Abraham about what his descendants were going to get. This is in there. And it's we set up our Emiklat. It's given all of the laws that the land west of the Yarden is given. But yeah, it's not entirely clear, this question of what this was supposed to be at the outset. But there's a lot going on here that's very difficult already. I mean, we're not done with Yiftach's letters.
Why is he giving this whole history? Like, why can't he just say it one? I guess so, but...
Why can't he say what?
Like in one line, you know, you guys didn't let us in, and it's ours. God gave it to us.
But it wasn't this whole thing. We took it from them. He didn't let us in, so we had to go around. We got the wall that was there.
Right. So Yiftach is actually making multiple points. Yeah. He's not just this isn't as simple as we didn't take this from you. We took it from the Amori.
And this is why we took it from the Amori, because. He's a typical politician.
Well, this is what's really interesting to me, is that he shouldn't be. That he mentions he's a typical politician, but what's his pedigree?
Yeah,
he's the leader of a band of ruffians, you know.
Well, I mean, he had to show leadership.
Who made their living by plundering.
Yeah, yeah. At this point,
and now he's suddenly an ambassador.
Yeah, it sounds right, like a reformation. Yeah, all of a sudden he's this.
Well, he's risen.
I think it's really interesting, and I think it's also interesting because it sounds like he thinks this is going to work. It sounds like he thinks this is protocol. Like, okay, this is what you do.
And also he says, Koamar Yiftach, like, I am the great Yiftach talking.
Right, so we want to come back to that phrase. It's an interesting one.
And I wanted to know why it talks about Moab. What did they come into this?
Yeah. Who threw Moab into here?
They were together always someone.
No, so who mentioned that?
Our land. I mean, because we didn't take your land or Moab's land. Like, what did they have to do with anything?
Right. Who mentioned Moab? And Moab was going to figure prominently in this. Not only that, but how many people did he say, how many different groups did he say we sent messengers to? How many different groups? He says we sent to Edom,
yeah.
We sent to Moab, and we sent to Sichon.
Yeah.
Those of you who have a Tanakh, if you take a look back in Bamidbar, Perek Chaf, Bamidbar 20, yeah. Sentence 14. Right. He sent to the king of Edom. That we know. Check. Mm-hmm. If you go into Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, the next Perek, who did he send messengers to? Oh, it's there.
Sichon.
Yeah. He sends messages to Sichon. So the Amori got messages, and the Edomi got messages. Moab does not appear to have gotten a message. We're going to come back to them, because there is one place in the Chumash where it sort of sounds like maybe. But really, we met Moav. How? Remember your Sefer Bamidbar. It's an important book. How did we meet Moav? It's a memorable story. So yeah, Bilam, Balak, king of Moab, hires Bilam to go curse the Jews. Welcome to Moav. There's no letter writing campaign. So what are we? What is he talking about with? Yeah, they did. So what is he talking about here? They sent messengers to it. Balak sent messengers to Bilam, not us. No, we didn't even know what was going on. We're not involved in that story until the end. So these are all questions we need to address. But he's not done talking, Yiftach. He's got a lot to say. So far, he has made an argument that we didn't go looking for war, right? We sent messages saying, hey, let us through, none of this has to happen. And everybody was hostile to us. Okay, so now go back to Pasuk Chav Gimel in our parak in Shoftim Yud Aleph. Ve'ata Hashem Elokei Yisrael Horishes Ha'emori Mipnei Amo Yisrael. He said that now, Hashem, the God of Israel, has conquered the Amori for his nation Israel. Ve'ata Tirashenu. You think you should get it? Well, we won it off of the Amori. Now you think that you should get it off of us. Halo Esa Shor Yorishcha Kamosh Elohecha Oso Sirash. You have a God. His name is Kamosh. Whatever he gives you, that's what you get. And whatever Hashem, our God, takes from before us, he's been emphasizing all along, Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Right? So whatever Hashem Elokeinu takes Mipaneinu from in front of us. Oh, so Nirash, that's what we're going to get.
It's like my God's better than your God.
Yeah, it is. What's especially interesting is that Kamosha isn't their God. So we're going to have to talk about who Kamosha is. But Kamosha is not the God of Ammon. So that's another one we have to deal with here. But this is really, I think, a second argument that Yiftach brings. His first argument was, we didn't want to fight anybody. Don't blame us for taking land. We didn't have another option. His second argument is, God gave us this land from Sichem. You know, if your God, Kamosh, supposed God, Kamosh, could win it for you, then you would have it. You know, go wherever he sends you. Ve'ata, and now, Pasuk Chavhei, Hatov tov ata mi Balak ben Zippor melech Moav. Are you any better than Balak ben Zippor, king of Moav? And here, this is a very interesting turn of phrase. Harov ravim Yisrael im nilchom nilcham bam. Did he start a quarrel with Israel? Did he go to war with us? Yes, well, it's very poetic. This is the poet of the wilderness here. The Hatov Tov Harov Rav Im Nilchom Nilcham, right? But he's taunting him. Mm-hmm. Are you any better than Balak, king of Moab? Because Balak didn't go to war with us, right? He sent Bilam, but he didn't go to war. And that's his third argument. And then he says, Pasuk Chavav, B'shevas Yisrael b'cheshbon uvivnoseha. We've been sitting in Cheshbon and its surrounding villages. Uba Aror Uviv Noseh, as well as Aror. I think this is the same as Aroer, which we find in the Chumash. And its surrounding villages. Uba Chol HaArim Asher Al Yedei Arnon, and all the cities near the Arnon. Shlosh Meos Shana, we've been here for 300 years. Uma Duelo Yitzaltem Ba'Yizei, where you been? Right? Why haven't you fought us until now? What is this? Now, 300 years later, you're going to come and claim reparations? What do you want?
It's 300 years since they got it, but since Amon had had it, it was even before that.
So, you mean because Amon lost it to the Amorites?
Right.
Right, so it's even before that. We don't know how long it is, you know, before that. But the 300 years, and we'll talk about the 300 when we do this in more depth, the 300 years is just from when we fought the Amori. V'anochi lo chatasi lach. So, you know, Yiftach concludes saying, I haven't done anything to you. V'ata osei tira'ali lachem bi. You are doing bad things to fight me. Yishpot Hashem ha-shofet hayom bein b'nei Yisrael uvein b'nei Amon. God will judge today between the Jews and Amon. So you will be shocked by Pasuk Chavches. V'lo shama melech b'nei Amon el divrei Yiftach asher shalach
elav. Logic. That actually was a good argument. Lots of good arguments there.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back over this to understand what's going on here. First of all, Yiftach is not the only one in Chumash to try diplomacy and to try telling our history to somebody else. Our first example that I brought here on the sheet in source number one is Yaakov and Esav. Right? Yaakov comes back and he sends comes back from Lavan's house into Israel, and he sends messengers to Esav to say to him, Im Lavan Garti Voy Charadata, right? I've been away, and now here I am, I'm back. It's a short history because there is a short history. He's only been gone 20 years. His brother knows everything else about his history. The second example that I bring here is Moshe with Edom, where he gives our story about being slaves in Egypt and coming out of Egypt. He does it also with the Amori, but without any history, just an appeal to go through. And then the other one that I brought here is with Ezra. It's really before Ezra personally shows up, but when the Jews are building the Beis HaMikdash, there's Tatnai, is a Persian official, who comes to them and says, what are you doing building this temple here? And they give them the whole history about how we used to live in this land, and then we sinned, and God kicked us out, and then we came back. Those who've been learning Ezra with me on the Tuesday class know this. So the Jews try there as well, with this sort of, you know, lesson of our history. There may be other examples in Navi that I'm not thinking of. But it's pretty rare, I think, that the other side cares about our narrative. I mean, frankly, it's pretty rare that we care about somebody else's narrative, too, let's be fair. But you don't really find diplomacy succeeding as a general rule. Two notes, though, here. Number one here is that we've said that this book of Shoftim treats the Canaanim as God's tools, emphasizing how Hashem manipulates them, moves him here, moves them there. This is, to the best of my knowledge, I think that Mikra actually points this out in his preface to the book. This is the one place in Shoftim where we are introduced to the Canaanite perspective. Like, here's why I am doing what I am doing. Usually, it's just God brought them to harm the Jews. Or there was a fight between these people, because Hashem created it, like we saw with Abimelech, right? Here, it's, here's why we're fighting the Jews. It's because the Jews took our land. However, I don't think this is here in order to humanize the Canaanites. I don't think that's what this is about. I think the reason why this text is here is because it enables Yiftach to justify what we're doing. We didn't take this land. We weren't allowed, as a matter of fact, to take it from them. Hashem told us, don't go to war with Ammon. Don't go to war with Moab, as we'll see. The Canaanim, the Amori, took it from Ammon, and we took it from the Amori. That's how we ended up here.
But what does he have to justify? Meaning, if it was an optional war, then you'd have to justify why you're doing it. But if he's being attacked, it's just self-defense. Why do we need justification?
So let me come back to that question. It's a good question. Hold off a little bit longer, but we will get to that question, God willing. And if not, it will be after Pesach. I think we'll get to it here. It's in source number 4. If you want to jump ahead,
he will.
That's one piece, is that the fact that we're giving the Canaanite point of view is not, I think, because of them. I think it's because we are explaining for ourselves what are we doing here. But the other piece of it is this business about fighting Ammon and not fighting them and so on. The Gemara addresses this in source number 2. It's a Gemara in Chulin. We were told not to go to war with Moab. It was Devarim Perek Bet Pasuk Tet, which records what had already happened in Bamidbar, but it says there that we were told, Atatzar as Moav, don't fight Moav. So the Gemara says, Ki cheshbon ir sichon melech ha'emorihi, v'hu nilcham v'melech Moav, in Parshas Chukas, in Bamidbar Chafala, remember chapter 21, when we get the account of our war with the Amori, there's a pasuk that says Cheshbon was this major city of Sichon. We just saw Cheshbon mentioned here as well. Cheshbon was the city of Sichon, king of the Amori. He had fought the king of Moab and so on. And the Gemara wants to know why it is that we're getting this reference here, the history of the city of Sichon. So the Gemara asks, "Mai nafgamina? What's the difference? Who cares? Who owned this city when?" The Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. The answer is because God told Israel, "Al tatzar es Moav. Don't lay siege to Moab. You're not supposed to attack Moav." Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu lay say Sichon lay pok mi Moav. Hashem said, "Let Sichon come and take the city from Moab, v'leisu Yisrael v'olivku miSichon, and then let Israel come and take it away from Sichon." V'ayinu d'amar Rav Papa, such that Rav Papa said, "Ammon u'Moav tiaru b'Sichon." Ammon and Moab were purified in Sichon, meaning because Sichon conquered Ammon and Moab, that meant that the land was now fair game for us. That's the Gemara here. So Yiftach says, why is it that Ammon is starting with me? We've done nothing wrong. We didn't go looking for trouble. We didn't want any fight. But I asked the question, and Ori asked the question, of what exactly it is that he's doing here. What's this justification all about? So Abarbanel, in source number 3, says, Yiftach, basically what you said when I asked the question of why he's doing this, Yiftach is doing what you're supposed to do. Zachar mentioned She Yiftach Achreishu Sam Aleihem LaRosh Asakim Minag Hamalachim BaHasarim. Yiftach, now that he's been made into a leader, acts the way kings and nobles do. Right? You appointed the ruffian as a leader, so now he's doing what leaders do.
The other
Shoftim
didn't warn.
Well, the other Shoftim are dealing with a different circumstance. This is the first one that I can think of in which we're facing an enemy who isn't already controlling us. You're, in the other cases, you're revolting. Canaan is already controlling us. Moab, Aram, all of them, Midian, yeah, they all were dominant already, and we're fighting them off. In this case, Ammon is not in control. Ammon has come to fight us. First, they wanted to fight us before, then they backed off. Right, I think that may be the difference. So it says, "V'shalach malach es shalom l'malach b'nei Ammon." He sent messengers of peace. Messengers of peace wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense to people who are already, you know, over you. So he sent messengers kun shilchamimo before fighting with him. Yeah.
Maybe that's why we're getting their perspective. It's not, and God sent them because this isn't somebody who's already ruling over us. This is a different kind of situation.
It's not a punishment per se. The problem is that we saw that it was a punishment. The problem is that we were told back in Perek Yud that this was they were being sent because we had been bad and Hashem got fed up. But that's a barbanel. The other source that I wanted to show you, though, and this goes back to the question of, is this an obligation when you go to war, is this Medrash Tanoim in source number 4. Medrash Tanoim is collected by Rav David Zvi Hoffman. It's called Medrash Tanoim, which suggests that it goes back to the Tanoim, although we can't actually accurately date the period for it. But he's commenting on the pasuk which says, V'karasa eleha l'shalom, that when you go to war, you should sue for peace. So the Medrash says, Gadol hu ha-shalom. Peace is great. Sha'af b'lochama tzvichin shalom. Even when you go to war, your goal is really peace. She'ne'amar v'karasa ele'al ha-shalom. Like it says, and you shall sue for peace. V'chein u'omer v'eshlach malachim yimidbar k'demos divrei shalom le'mor. As in fact, Moshe said, I send agents from the k'demo wilderness with words of peace, saying, let me go through your land, and so on. V'omer v'eshlach yiftach malachim ha-melach b'nei Ammon le'mor. They quote our pasuk that Yiftach sent, trying to pursue peace. So the idea is that this is actually, according to this read, a fulfillment of a mitzvah. It's not just, let me be a diplomat, but that's what you do. And again, as I noted, the reason why we didn't see this yet would be because the other ones weren't normal wars. The other ones were rebellion against oppression. Okay.
So far he's a good leader. So far he's admirable.
So far so good. Yeah, we have another half hour, so don't worry. So he sends this message to them, either because he wants to be, you know, a political leader, or because he's fulfilling what you're supposed to do. Ammon says back, the Jews took our land. And Yiftach begins with his first argument, which is, we only took this land from Sichon, not you. And it was only because they forced us to do it. And he says, Ko Amar Yiftach. So says Yiftach. So Ralbag says in source number 5 that yes, you should pick up on those words. It appears that he sent to him at the start of the second message. So says Yiftach. Ki ula Yiftach hayam mefursam beineihem begvura, because maybe Yiftach was well known as a mighty person, right? He was known enough among the Jews as a dangerous man. So could be, he was known in general for that. So he's trying to tell him, I am the sheriff in town. Such that Ammon would back down and say, well, we don't want to mess with him. Right. It didn't actually pan out that way, but that was the try. Okay. Komar Yiftach. Okay, and so he says, the Jews did not take the land of Moab and the land of Ammon, and he introduces Moab to this discussion. Why in the world does he mention Moab? So Radak says that the land that Ammon identified before, from the Abok to the Arnon, or the Arnon to the Abok for that matter, includes Moab's land. This is not only, in other words, Ammon didn't mention Moab, but the land they mentioned was Moab's. That's one explanation. Alternatively, you could answer, and the Dot Mikra suggests, that there is a historic pact between Ammon and Moab. We do always see them together. They're brothers, right? They're the sons from Lot and his daughters. They're not brothers, sorry, they are. They're brothers and first cousins. What a mess. So they work together, and therefore it makes sense to respond regarding Moab as well as Ammon. Don't bother trying to figure it out. It's not worth it. So he says, we came out of Egypt. We got to Yam Suf. Rashi says the reason that he mentions Yam Suf in particular, and Kadesh is really what matters, but Yam Suf is the southern boundary of Edom. However, Radak notes something interesting, which is also found in a discussion in Tosfos, on the Gemara. You notice that it says we went ad Yam Suf. So here's a nice little pointer for your Seder. We didn't actually go through the Yam Suf. Or, to say it more accurately, we went through it twice. We made a semicircle. And then you wonder why we're stuck in the Midbar for 40 years. We couldn't even go through the sea strand. If you look at the Psukim carefully, we came out of the sea on the same side on which we had entered it. We made an arc through it and back out. No, they don't.
We're just following.
But that way we succeeded in drowning the Egyptians.
They couldn't go another way. Interesting.
Yeah, it was a U-turn.
But they didn't know.
They came right lost.
So then how come the Egyptians were drowned?
That's exactly the point, because the sea splits. We go in, right. The Egyptians follow in after us, we come out
the same way we
the same side. Well, we've made an arc.
Oh, we've made, okay.
And the Egyptians don't make it out because the sea closes on them. Yeah. Very strange, but that's the view.
And then we go around.
And then we end up, well, you have the, do you have it on your map here, or is your map not going far enough south?
Why did we go around the
first time? Because we would have gone through the first time.
Because we were being chased by the Egyptians. The Egyptians are right behind us. That was the fastest way.
You go this way or you go that way.
You end up then going south around the Yam Suf.
Right. So that's why we would have to go around, because otherwise we would have been in.
Yes. Had we crossed the Yam Suf, the next step would have been in the land of Edom.
Yeah, and then we would have been.
Oh, we couldn't go there.
Well, we weren't supposed to.
Wow.
So Radak reads that into the word here. It says, Ad Yam Suf. We went up to the Yam Suf, but we didn't actually cross it. That would have put us in Edom, and we weren't going there yet. So then we went south, and eventually we ended up, yeah, this 40-year interlude, we ended up at Edom.
Nobody ever talks
about what?
That we didn't come.
Yeah.
They say cross the
river. Yeah.
Big
according to Radak, according to the Tosfos, yes. Okay. So we sent messengers, meaning, as Abarbanel notes in source number 6, we already said it when we read the text, Yomer Sheyisra, Kasher Olavi Mitzrayim, Ubad Kadesh, Miyad Shalach Malachim, Melech Edom, Vagam Melech Moav. We immediately sent messengers to the king of Edom, we sent messengers to the king of Moav. We did not want trouble. As I noted already, we don't have any explicit mention whatsoever of us sending messengers to Moab. The only thing that we sort of get is Devarim Perek Bet Pasuk Chav Tet, Devarim 2:29. I did not put it on the sheet, but for those who have one, it's a very interesting statement there. This is what Moshe says when describing what happened with the Amori. And he says, Ka'asher asuli b'nei Esav ha'yoshvim v'seir, as Esav was sitting in Seir, meaning Edom, Esav is Edom, as the Torah says. So as they did to us, but what was it that they did? What was it that Esav did? As they did, va'amoavim, as well as the Moavim who are dwelling there, right? Ad asher avoris ha'yardein, until I cross the Yardein. The request he makes of Sichon is to do something as Edom did and as Moab did. The problem is that we don't know what they did. I mean, Edom wasn't friendly. Moab was not friendly. They did not let us go through their land. So Rashi there, on that pasuk in Devarim, says that they sold us food and water. That they wouldn't let us come through their land, but they sold us food and water.
Well, the thing with
Moab is we're told don't marry among Moab because they did not give you food and water. So according to what Rashi is saying, they didn't give it to us, they sold it to us. But that wasn't good enough, and that's why we were told not to marry among them. Radak, on the other hand, quotes Ibn Ezra to say that they actually did allow us to go through the outlying areas. And that's what he was requesting from Sichon. they didn't block us from their entire land. Some parts of it we were able to go through. But either way, in Moshe's reference here, he seems to say that there was some kind of a dialogue with Moab. It wasn't just the Bilam story. There was some kind of dialogue that either led to them selling us stuff, according to Rashi, or to allowing us to go through parts of their area, according to Radak / Ibn Ezra. Okay. But Sichon was worse. Whatever it was that they let us do, Edom, Moab, whatever it was, didn't involve going to war. Sichon went to war with us, and that's how we ended up in your land. That's part one. That's argument number one. We didn't want the fight. Here's the whole history about our journey and how we ended up with the land. Second, you can't benefit from our God's defeat of Sichon. If you have a problem, take it up with your God. Take it up with Chemosh. So I already noted that Chemosh is not their God. Malcolm is their God. We know Malcolm. I wonder if that's where Malcolm comes from. We know this because there's actually a passage when the Jews under David HaMelech go to war with Ammon. David gets the king of Malcolm. It's not the king of Malcolm. It's not their king, Malcolm. It's the crown of their god, which they nullify as idolatry, and David takes it and actually wears it as his crown, which is its own story. But it was a nice crown. So the question is, why did he mention Chemosh? What Chemosh is actually the god of Moab. Chemosh is the god of Moab. Did I give you the reference?
Yeah,
in 7, in the Radak that we're going to see there. We're not ready for that Radak just yet. But Chemosh is the god of Moab. So I saw a very interesting suggestion from Professor Yechezkel Kaufman of Hebrew U. He suggests that Yiftach is in diplomatic mode. He doesn't want to say, your god was defeated, right? Malcolm, which they still believe in, you know, was defeated by Sichon. So therefore he mentions Chemosh, which is not their god, which is, you know, the god of Moab. It's an interesting suggestion. I'm not sure how much water it holds, but it's an interesting suggestion. But in any case, he mentions the god of Moab. Why does he mention the god? You don't want to mention their god. Okay, but what are you mentioning the god of Moab for? So now we'll take a look at Radak in source number 7. Radak says this is a serious statement that he's making. Atash Shoel Ha'aretz Shehimi Moab. You are asking for this land, which is part of Moab. Umelech Amorila Kachami Moab, Velohitzilo Kemosh Elohav. The king of the Amori took it from Moab. Kemosh, the god of Moab, was not able to save them. V'chein haya b'fi ha-moshalim, and that's what the rulers used to say. It's a pasuk. Oy lecha Moab, avadata am Kemosh. Woe to you, Moab. You've been lost. You are lost, this nation of Kemosh. V'im kein hu sheha'aretz ha'isalach ha'isalach. And if this land really was yours, meaning your Moabites, hu Kemosh haya alohecha, and Kemosh was your god. Esa sher yorishcha Kemosh alohecha, so sirash, whatever Kemosh your god gives you, great, that's what you take. He could not save it from the Amorite king. Hashem, our God, took the Amorite from before us, and we took that land. So Radak positions it as a direct statement of, if you have a problem, you believe in the God of that land, you believe that land is yours, he lost. That's the way it goes. Ralbag says that he's making fun of him. It's sarcastic. Source number 8, he was at the bottom of one side, English top of the other. Va'amar lo al tzad halak, he says to him as mockery. Hello, Esa sher yorishcha Kemosh alohecha, so sirash, whatever Kemosh your God can get for you, gezuntei. Ki lo yachol Kemosh alohehem lahatzila miyat Sichon, Kemosh their God wasn't so successful at saving them from Sichon, give it a shot. That's what Yiftach says. That's his second argument, is you're not benefiting from our God's defeat of Sichon. We're not about to turn this over to you. Third argument is Pasuk Chaf Hei, sentence 25, in which he said Balak didn't fight us because he knew he couldn't win. Take a look at source number 9. Radak explains. Radak has a different view of the Pasuk a little bit. He's he says there was a war with Moab, but it wasn't a physical war. It was the Bilam war. Hamelchama, his problem is that we have another pasuk that indicates there was a war. So he says the war was Shishalach Bilam the Kalil Osam, sending Bilam to curse us. V'hineh lo nocham em Yisrael bavur atzo, but he did not fight for his land. They didn't actually go to war. And then the last argument is we've been here for 300 years. So here Rashi brings you from the Medrash in Seder Olam Rabba how you get to 300 years. It's Seder Olam Rabba Yud Bet. And what he says is that from here we learn, we've always had this question. Every time we read that the Jews were subservient to some nation, and then there was a Shofet, and we threw off that nation, and the Shofet ruled for X number of years, the question is always, how much of the Shibud, of the slavery period, is included in the period when the Shofet ruled over us? This goes all the way back to our question in the very beginning of the book, 36 shiurim ago, of whether the Shoftim are constant or whether there are gaps between them. Rashi, following Seder Olam, believes that it's constant, that there are Shoftim present, and that's how we do the chronology. So if you take, well, no, I didn't actually bring it on the sheet, but I'll tell it to you. Rashi says the way to read there, our chronology is, Yoshua, we know, was 28 years. So it's 28 years from the time that we entered the land. Othniel ben Kenaz is 40 years, including the time when we are living under Aram, Kushan Rish Atayim. Ehud is 80 years, and that includes the time when we are living under Moab. Devorah is 40 years, including the time when we're living under Canaan. Midian is 7 years of oppression, followed by 40 years of Gidon. Gidon's 40 years are the years when we've already thrown off Canaan. So, thrown off Midian, I should say. Abimelech, we know, was 3 years. Tola was 23 years. Yair was 22 years. There's 1 year of overlap between the two of them. And then 18 years of Ammon, a grand total of 300. That's the idea. Where did we see 18 years of Ammon? Where did we see 18 years of Ammon? Let's go back for a second. Where was that? It would have to be. There it is. Yeah, they were attacking us back in 10:8. Perek Yud Pasuk Ches. They're attacking us for 18 years. It's not oppression. They're not dominant over us, but they're attacking us, giving us a hard time. Okay, that's 18. So anyway, if you add up all the numbers I just told you, it's 300.
Okay.
You can trust me or not. That's Yiftach's message that he sends to Ammon. And as we said, Ammon is not particularly impressed. Abarbanel notes that it says that Ammon doesn't listen, if you look at the wording in Pasuk Chavches, El Divrei Yiftach Asher Shalach Elav, to the words of Yiftach that he sent to them. So Abarbanel said it's because it's Yiftach. They view Yiftach as an illegitimate ruler and an unworthy person with whom to communicate. So
somebody else had sent those messengers? Would he have backed off?
We don't know. That's what Abarbanel says, though. He says Yiftach isn't impressive to them. Okay. That may be part of Abarbanel's philosophy, which he expresses elsewhere, that there's sort of the natural-born ruler, and then there's the person who may, earn it or get to it somehow, but isn't as good as the one who's the natural-born ruler. Abarbanel prefers the one who's a leader from birth, trained in it from birth. He holds that against David HaMelech. He says that that's a flaw in King David, that he starts out as a shepherd, not as royalty. And that's why Shlomo can build a Beis HaMikdash and David cannot.
It's interesting that that's like completely opposite of one of Yitzhak's logical reasons, because he has a name and he has fear amongst other people. And he's famous for this, and now he's saying the opposite.
Yeah, Abarbanel can do that. Okay. So, here we get the infamous vow. Pasuk Chavtet, sentence 29. Let's read 29 to 31. Vatihi al Yiftach Ruach Hashem. The Spirit of God was upon Yiftach. Right? That all-important phrase, which we've seen with some other Shoftim, right? Connoting some kind of prophecy or Ruach HaKodesh, but Hashem is now motivating them. Vayavoris haGilad ve'es Menashe. He passes through Gilad and Menashe. Vayavoris mitzpeh Gilad. He passes through mitzpeh Gilad. Umimitzpeh Gilad avar b'nei Amon. And from mitzpeh Gilad, he passes to b'nei Amon. He's doing a lot of traveling, logging those miles. Vayidar yiftach neder l'Hashem, and he took a vow to God, vayomar, and he declared, Im nason titenes b'nei Amon b'yadi, if you will put Amon in my hands, v'hayah yotzei asher yetzei midalsei ve'silik rasi, the one who departs, the one who comes out of the doors of my house to greet me, v'shuvi v'shalom l'bnei Amon, when I come back in peace from Amon, v'hayah l'Hashem, it will be for God, v'ha'alisihu ola, and I will bring it up as a burnt offering. That's what an ola is.
Why?
Sorry?
Who's normally in this house?
Well, let's ask the first question. What does he think is going to happen?
Like, the dog's going to come
out? Cow's going to come out of here.
Sheep.
Do cows normally leave the doors of the house?
Well, a dog.
Sheep? Do you keep those things in your home? I'm going to ask another one so I come.
I do not keep sheep. Uh-huh.
Keep the kids busy. Like, what is
why
this?
Does he have a gazillion servants and he doesn't care if one of them? Like,
is he imagining human sacrifice? I have a hard time with that.
He's right outside where is he? Is he out of the
in the wild?
In the wild. Mm-hmm. So maybe out in the wild. Maybe there's wild things running around.
In the house.
But in his house? It could be in the yard.
Is he being like rash?
That's very specific.
Could be.
He's
it's not like there's a power and he's just in the yard grazing.
This is a really weird thing.
Is elevation offering the same?
Do we have any?
It's a burnt offering. I mean, everything is sentenced to God.
Do we have any?
No one's eating any part of it.
For anyone else doing any kind of?
That's a good question. Do we have any kind of precedent for this? Is this considered a good thing? Do the good guys do this sort of thing? So, first of all, just in terms of his journey. That mikra suggests he actually had gone back. We mentioned this a while back when we talked about why he had his covenant with the people who wanted him to lead them. He made the covenant in Mitzvah. So that mikra said he actually goes home after that to the land of Tov. And that's where he rallies first, and then he starts traveling through, gathering troops, and so he goes all the way through the land, getting people to join him for this battle. That fits especially if you view the chronology, that there was a gap in time between the original rally against Amon and what's happening now. And then he takes this vow. So as a general rule, we are not in favor of vows. We believe that taking vows is a bad thing and should not be done. I gave you two references as examples in source number 10. The first one in Devarim Chaf Gimel says, V'chisech dal lindor lo yebachachet. When you stop vowing, you will not have sin. Meaning, making promises is just, it's a recipe for disaster. You don't want to do that. You have enough mitzvos, thank God, to fulfill. It's not like you have nothing to keep you busy. You don't need to create new mitzvos, which is effectively what you do when you take a neder. Right? You have created a brand new mitzvah. So it's amazing that human beings have that kind of power. Like, you can add to the Torah, but it's not something you should really use. So that's one. And then the other pasuk from Kohelet says, Tov asher lo tidor. Better not to take vows at all than to take a vow and fulfill it. In other words, I might have thought the hierarchy is, the lowest is to take a vow and not fulfill it. Better to be neutral and just don't vow. And the best is if you take the vow and fulfill it. That's not what Kohelet says. Kohelet says, better not to vow at all. In fact, we have a troubled national history of vows. You remember the story with the spoils of Yericho. Why were the spoils of Yericho off limits?
Because didn't he say...
Yeshua said, if we win this war, nobody will touch any of the spoils. I mean, a whole discussion about why he did it. Maybe because it was there. Sorry?
Was it a neder? Did it have a term?
Yes. I mean, the declaration of Cherem is a neder.
Oh.
The one of the reasons that we gave was because it was our first conquest in the land, and therefore it was special, and we didn't want to touch the spoils. It's like the Bikurim, you're giving it to God. Another was because this war took place on Shabbos, perhaps, and therefore we probably shouldn't profit from it. All these different explanations that we gave. There were times in the Midbar, in the wilderness, when the spoils were declared off limits. But fundamentally, the result of it is a disaster, because Achan takes from the spoils, and then we lose our next battle against Ai, and we're punished for this. And Rashi there, Hashem says to Yehoshua, after Achan has taken from the spoils and we've lost the war, Hashem says to Yehoshua, Kum lach, get up you, lamata nofel apanecha, why are you falling on your face? There's, you have work to do. But look at Rashi on Kum lach, in source number 11. Rashi says, Bishvilcha zos lahem. This happened to the Jews because of you. Lo amarti lechalakdish shalal ha'ir. I didn't tell you to consecrate the spoils of the city. He's blamed for doing that. I gave you another example, a reference in number 12, with Shaul. The Jews are fighting the war against the Plishtim, and Shaul takes a vow that nobody shall eat that day. And then his son, Yonasan, ends up eating, and the nation has to save Yonasan to bail him out, because he should die as a punishment for eating, because that was the penalty for breaking this this vow. So, generally speaking, we have this very bad history of vows, and we have a tendency in the Chumash and in Navi to say, no, you shouldn't take them. However, you can't get around the fact that the Torah has a concept of taking a neder. We have laws of Nedarim in the beginning of Parshas Matos. We have the special case in Parshas Naso of the Nazir, where the Torah gives us a framework for someone to take a vow of being a Nazir. And sometimes vows do turn out well. I gave you a reference in source number 13. Breishis Chavches. That's Yaakov's Neder. Right? Yaakov vows before he meets with Esav, if Hashem will be with me and, I'm sorry, on his way out, on the way out to Laban's house, if Hashem will be with me and guard me and give me food and all that, then I'm going to give one-tenth, you know, to God. One-tenth of whatever I get, he says he's going to give to Hashem, and that's considered a positive thing. It's even the model for the 10% for tzedakah, potentially, is from what Yaakov did. The Jews fight a war against the Canaanite in Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, and they declare the spoils to be off limits. That's a neder. That's a vow. So if you take a look at source number 14, you find what Tosfos has to say. After having said that vows are bad, Tosfos says, well, according to the view that vows are bad, what's he going to do with, you know, Yaakov? Vim Tomer, you might ask, Vaksiv, Vayidar Yaakov Neder. The sentence says Yaakov took a vow. Uksiv, or look at Yonah. When Yonah is inside the fish, he promises, Ezasher Nadarti Ashalema, that which I have vowed I will fulfill. V'yesh Lomar, you could say, Dibisha'as Tzara Shari. Maybe it's different if you're in a time of trouble. Maybe we look at that differently. Kedarmina and Bereshis Rabba. In fact, we have a medrash in Bereshis Rabba, which Tosfos quotes. Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor ledoros sheyu nodrim be'ez tzara. This medrash is bothered. The verse when Yaakov takes his vow says, Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor. Yaakov took a vow lemor. What does the word lemor mean? To say to somebody else. It doesn't mean saying usually. Usually it means to go tell somebody else. So who was Yaakov telling God to say this to? He took a vow to God to say, if Hashem will be with me, and so on. So the Medrash explains, it was to say to the generation, to future generations, this is a model, if you're in trouble, to take vows to God, saying, if Hashem will help me, then I will do such and such. And this is something that people do. You can't deny that there is value to it, and that's what Yiftach thinks he's doing. Right? Yiftach thinks that this is the type of vow that he's taking here. Unfortunately, it's a mess, the vow that he's taking here. It's a colossal mess. So that's, I think that's probably where we'll pick up next time, is the question of, so what was he thinking in choosing this? Like, didn't you promise to give 10% to Tzedakah or something? Like, you really needed to do this. God willing, after Pesach, we will resume.